Chapter 13. Although he disliked the menial filth of public taxis, Senator Sedgwick Sexton had learned to endure the occasional demeaning moment along his road to glory. The grungy Mayflower cab that had just deposited him in the lower parking garage of the Purdue Hotel afforded Sexton something his stretched limousine couldn't. Anonymity. He was pleased to find this lower level deserted, only a few dusty cars dotting a forest of cement pillars. As he made his way diagonally across the garage on foot, Sexton glanced at his watch. 11:15 a.m. Perfect. The man with whom Sexton was meeting was always touchy about punctuality. Then again, Sexton reminded himself, considering who the man represented, he could be touchy about any damn thing he wanted. Sexton saw the white Ford Windstar minivan parked in exactly the same spot as it had been for every one of their meetings, in the eastern corner of the garage behind a row of trash bins. Sexton would have preferred to meet this man in a suite upstairs, but he certainly understood the precautions. This man's friends had not gotten to where they were by being careless. As Sexton moved toward the van, he felt the familiar edginess that he always experienced before these encounters. Forcing himself to relax his shoulders, he climbed into the passenger's seat with a cheery wave. The dark-haired gentleman in the driver's seat did not smile. The man was almost 70 years old, but his leathery complexion exuded a toughness appropriate to his post as figurehead of an army of brazen visionaries and ruthless entrepreneurs. "Close the door," the man said, his voice callous. Sexton obeyed, tolerating the man's gruffness graciously. After all, this man represented men who controlled enormous sums of money, much of which had been pooled recently, to poise Sedgwick Sexton on the threshold of the most powerful office in the world. These meetings, Sexton had come to understand, were less strategy sessions than they were monthly reminders of just how beholden the senator had become to his benefactors. These men were expecting a serious return on their investment. The return, Sexton had to admit, was a shockingly bold demand. And yet, almost more incredibly, it was something that would be within Sexton's sphere of influence once he took the Oval Office. "I assume," Sexton said, having learned how this man liked to get down to business, "that another installment has been made."
"It has. And as usual, you are to use these funds solely for your campaign. We've been pleased to see the polls shifting consistently in your favor, and it appears your campaign managers have been spending our money effectively. We're gaining fast. As I mentioned to you on the phone," the old man said, "I have persuaded 6 more to meet with you tonight."
"Excellent." Sexton had blocked off the time already. The old man handed Sexton a folder.
"Here's their information. Study it. They want to know you understand their concerns specifically. They want to know you are sympathetic. I suggest you meet them at your residence."
"My home, but I usually meet..."
"Senator, these 6 men run companies that possess resources well in excess of the others you have met. These men are the big fish, and they are wary. They have more to gain, and therefore more to lose. I've worked hard to persuade them to meet with you. They will require special handling, a personal touch."
Sexton gave a quick nod. "Absolutely. I can arrange a meeting at my home.
Of course, they will want total privacy."
"As will I."
"Good luck," the old man said. "If tonight goes well, it could be your last meeting. These men alone can provide what is needed to push the Sexton campaign over the top."
Sexton liked the sound of that. He gave the old man a confident smile. "With luck, my friend, come election time, we will all claim victory."
"Victory?"
The old man scowled, leaning toward Sexton with ominous eyes.
"Putting you in the White House is only the first step toward victory, Senator. I assume you have not forgotten that."